Mr. Albert Rogers, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Rogers?
I was born at 47 Ferdinand, F-I-N-D-A-N, Street, Ferdinand Street, Camden, Chalk Farm, London, Northwest 5. On the 12th of July 1924.
Could you tell us a bit about your family background?
My mother died in 1926. She was 26 when she died, and she was on, it was on the 26th day. My grandmother, Mrs. Rhoda Bishop, brought me up, and my oldest brother and my youngest brother.
And what sort of an upbringing did you get? Were you hard up, or how were you?
Well, I would say a little bit better than a lot of people, but I had to go out at work when I was 11 years of age to walk from Camden Town to Hampstead, and had to be there at 4:45 in the morning to help the milkman. Now, his name was Potter. And, when I come home from school, I was a bit of a rebel. And my grandmother, used to give me a good hiding, which I deserved. And my grandfather wouldn't allow no one else to lay their hand on us.
What did your grandparents do for a living, or had they retired?
My grandfather had an antique shop, and finished up as a rag shop. My grandmother was just a housewife as far as my grandfather was concerned.
Did you stay in touch with your dad?
I saw my dad about twice, maybe three times a year. Where he was and that, I don't know.
Now, what about your education? Which school did you go, and how did you do at school?
Aberstock Hill School. That's in Aberstock Hill. And I would say I wasn't very good at education. But I was good with my hands, but not with my brain. And, when I became 14 years of age, in those days, your parents could put you in the Army, Navy or Air Force as a boy, soldier, sailor or airman. Well, my grandmother, being my eldest brother, was in the Naval Brigade, made him take me and join it when I was 14 years of age.
Now, what was the Naval Brigade?
The Naval Brigade was TA could be, but they were on board ship, and when there was any trouble and the army needed help, they took men off board the ships to help the army out. Or if the Navy was a place and there was an uprising, the Naval Brigade used to go ashore and crush them and keep the peace.
Now, where did you join the Naval Brigade? Where was it based? Which one? Did it have a name other than that?
Fleet Road, Hampstead. A place called Warrior Hall.
And it was just known as the Naval Brigade, not the Hampstead Naval Brigade.
No, just the Naval Brigade. And it was only two places left. One was in Hampstead, and the other place, the Naval Brigade, was either in Birmingham or Manchester. That I can't quite remember. Because in 1939, September the 3rd, 1939, the Naval Brigade stopped.
Well, we'll come to that. Now, so you joined at Warrior Hall. What happened when you went to join up them?
Well, I wasn't all that happy because I was enough dragged there by my brother.
Do you know what month it was?
No, I can't.
It was 1938.
Yeah.
When you were 14?
Yeah.
And what happened when you got there?
Well, when I look round and see all the different guns and the knots, and they had a 2-pounder field gun and a heavy Vickers machine gun, which fascinated me, and I took to it. And of course, if I stepped out of line, a lot of them were ex Royal Naval Reserve, wasn't backward, they'd put in their boot right up your backside or clump round the ear hole.
Now, were you interviewed before you joined, or did they just take you?
No, well, they just took me in because my brother was a leading signalman in the Naval Brigade.
Now, what about uniform? Did you have a uniform for when you went up there?
I had a top, but no trousers.
What sort of top was it?
A proper naval top, with a collar, with the collar and white front, and lanyard.
Was that provided for you, or did you have to buy it yourself?
No, they provided it for me. Well, I think someone had it to alter to fit me.
And what, any other uniform or kit that you were issued with?
No, that's all.
And what night did you go up there for your training?
Well, we used to go, I think it was Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays.
You went every three nights a week?
Yeah.
And what were the typical nights training? How did they start training you?
Well, the first thing you got in there was marching round the hall, and one of the leading seamen would shout out, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, and halt, you know, right turn, left turn, about turn, then it went on to rifle drill.
Now, hang on, how did you take to foot drill? I mean, you were a bit of a rebel, you said. I mean, how did you take to drill? Some people don't like it, some people do.
Well, I was so fascinated with being there that I accepted it. And I must say, I enjoyed it. And because after the marching and rifle drill...
Oh, we haven't done rifle. What was the rifle drill?
Well, how to slope arms, order arms, present arms. Then after that, they taught you how to fix bayonets and general workings of the rifle, which was a Ross rifle, not the Enfield, Ross rifle. And from there...
Did they actually give you a chance? Did they teach you how to sort of clean the rifle? And
oh, yes, they showed you how to clean the rifle with a pull-through.
How did you do that? Do you remember?
Yes, you used to have a little opening on the butt of the rifle, and you'd take it out, and you'd look down the barrel, and you used to put a piece of paper in the breech and look down to see if it was nice and clean. If it wasn't, you pulled through with the wire, a lump of wire that is fixed on the end of the pull-through. Then you pulled through with a cloth until it was sparkling, so all the rifling could see that it was really clean. And if it wasn't cleaning, you finished up cleaning the toilets, more or less with a very small hand brush. Not a toothbrush, just a small hand brush. And you had to do it.
And did that ever happen to you?
Oh, yes, well, quite more than once. Because I said, all I want to do is get behind this
Vickers.
Heavy Vickers machine gun.
Now, what about sticking to the Ross rifle? Did they teach you how to fire it? I mean, you know, how to aim and fire it?
Oh, yes. They teach you how to fire it first, how to hold it in the position for firing, standing, kneeling, laying, and also firing from the hip. Then
Just theoretical, though.
Theoretical. Then, what's called it? They had rifle was altered to take a 2-2 round. And they used to put it on fixed lines, set up, and you pulled the trigger, and it could tell you if you were pulling it to the right or going up to the left anyway. Then they used to alter the sights. Then you done it from a kneeling position at a target, and they could tell you then if you were on the ball or not, on the bullseye.
And how were you?
Very good, actually. Very good. And of course, from there you went on to tie knots, reef knot.
Hang on, but you didn't actually... Now, did you actually get a chance to fire the rifle full bore?
No. No.
So just a bit of .22 work.
Just a .22 rifle, yeah.
Right, sorry. We'll go on through the weapons before we come to the knots. What other weapons were you interested in? Did you get any bayonet practice or just how to fix it?
They give you the bayonet practice with the rifle and how to pivot, how to block, how to use the bayonet as a thrust and pull out and bring your right hand and with the butt under the chin. Or wherever, because that doesn't always work. In actual, as I found out later in years, it doesn't work the way they teach you.
And did you actually get any practice where you charge bags on sort of?
Oh
gallop?
Yes, we had the bayonet. Then, the bayonet practice, yes. Bayonet practice, yeah.
Did you think the bayonet then was a serious weapon?
Well, yes, because. We've heard so many First World War servicemen talking about close quarter firing and fighting that you had to use it any way you can to save your own life.
So you took it seriously?
Oh, yes.
Was it the long bayonet on the Ross?
On 18 inch, yeah.
Not the pig sticker.
Oh, no, no. They had two sizes, the 18-inch and the 12-inch.
Now, any other weapon you were introduced to?
The Lewis gun.
Now, what about the Lewis gun? How far did your training go with that?
Well, how to strip it down, how to clean it and replace it. And it's the worst gun that was ever invented.
Why is that?
Had more stoppages if you didn't look after it properly. And I got to the point that one of the petty officers there saw me doing it and he took me to one side for about half an hour each night we was up there. And he taught me. When you put blanks in it and fire it, you can tell if you're going to get any stoppages. And on a double, so you do a single pan or a double pan. And it finished up that I could fire a double pan without any stoppage at all. There's a knack in it. How to wipe it when you put each bullet in, how to wipe it, and just run a very, very slight bit of grease over it. So, because a human hair was caught round, it would cause a stoppage. And luck would have it, that and the heavy Vickers machine gun were the two things I was... Then...
Did you actually get a chance to fire the Lewis?
No.
Just blanks?
Just blanks, yes.
Now, what about the Vickers? Because that was what had first attracted you. That's a big machine gun, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
How did they train you on that? What did you think of it?
Well, I got fascinated by it because when they you put the belt through that holds 250 rounds of ammunition, you cock it twice, then you pull the trigger, and the way it goes. And it's the only gun that's ever been made that holds two rounds in the magazine at the same time. And it's called the lock. And they showed this particular person that was teaching me on it. He said, there's only two ways to stop a runaway Vickers, a Vickers gun. That's either twist the belt, which can cause damage, or the other one is where you check it to see if everything's all right, you pull the button up and the arm comes up and the magazine, well, not the magazine, the lock jumps up out of position, which does no damage. It's just two things I'll never forget. Oh, and it was a water-cooled Vickers.
Was it easy to strip down?
Well, as a machine gunner, yes. But to go into the finer parts, it had to go back to the armoury.
So how far would you go? I mean, would you strip the lock down, or would you just get down to the lock?
Oh, get down to the lock and clean it and, make sure the barrel's clean and the water is travelling through properly. See?
And did you get a chance to fire that? Or, again, was it just blanks?
No, I never used blanks because there'd be too many.
So you just basically practice the routine of it?
Yeah, the routine. And
so you couldn't practice aiming it because they had a tap method, didn't they?
Oh, well, yes. It was one tap. No, three taps. It was equivalent to 1 degree. That's when it's on the tripod. And
so they did, although you couldn't fire it, they taught you as far as the tap system.
Yes. And how to, if you wanted a spray, how to undo the lock that holds it in position, to swing it right to left or left to right, whatever. Or up or down, depending if you're a low-flying aircraft.
Did they teach you any of the theory of barrage fire? Because they've used the Vickers for long-range barrage fire, you know, for things that are out of sight. Did you do any of that?
Well, it was actually, the Vickers, the heavy Vickers machine gun, wasn't an accurate gun in the sense of the word as a Lee Enfield. Over, I think it's 200 to 300 yards, if you fired half a belt, it would spray the area of about 10 yards either way of the centre. It was like a spray gun.
But I mean, you know, long range, not indirect fire behind enemy lines. Did you learn any of the theory of that?
Well, all they do is you're just taught that just pull the muzzle down the
back.
Bayonet, the spud grips, what they call the shovel grips, down, and just press it with your button. You lift the safety catch up and press the centre bit, and that fires up, high, then down. See, but mostly it was more or less for a counter attack from the enemy for clearing the way.
What about grenades or mortars? I mean, or did you get introduced to them?
Not mortars.
Army?
No.
Or grenades, hand grenades?
Hand grenades, yes.
What did you do with them?
Well, they showed you how to, aim and everything. You pull the pin, hand right down, left hand in the air, then throw up in the air, and as it goes, the pin flies out. Because you've already taken the ring out. Which is very good in theory. But it's no good in practice. Didn't find out about that until later.
We'll come back to that then. Yeah. Because, you know, we'll come to that in order. Did you actually get a chance to throw? There were dummy ones you threw up.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they were dummy, what they call practice grenades. See, they're exactly the same as an ordinary grenade, and it weighs the same, but, see, you've got a pin that holds a lever down, but that's all welded. See, so if you pull the pin out, that won't look, because inside you've got your fuse. See, so it won't go off.
And where would you practice in the hall, or had you a field behind, or an open
space?
Well,
we used to go outside, and they used to have a couple of dustbins. And the idea was, you went back, say, about 20 yards, and you had to throw it to get it in the thing. And they, of course, after a while, they say, well, we go back, and you finish up well outside, in the street, throwing these grenades to see if you could get the height so it would drop further.
How far could you throw them? Because they're quite heavy, aren't they? They're heavier than people think.
Well, you could throw one. Well, we tried in the later on in life that I could pitch one round about 75 to 50, but I think the furthest I ever done was about 65, 70 yards.
Yards?
That's, yeah.
That's very good.
It was very
good.
You
used a bowling action, did you? You know,
bowling action, yeah.
And any other weapons training
They had the forerunner of the Sten gun, which was called the Stirling.
They had that then?
They had one there, a Stirling.
Pre-war?
Pre-war. It's very, very... It's around about size of a teacup. Round, it was a barrel. And it was the forerunner of the Sten gun. Because that was soon thrown out when the Sten gun was... And the Bren gun.
And what did you think of the Stirling?
Well, it was a very good gun, automatic, as at the time. See, because one man could do more than about three, four men put together.
With a rifle?
See, with a rifle. But other than that...
You wouldn't get, if you only had one, you wouldn't get much opportunity on that, would you?
Well, I mean, it depends on the individual, how good he was firing from the hip or from the shoulder with it. Because you very seldom used it in the laying position.
And what I mean, the Sten was a very cheap gun, you know, and,
yes.
And not that safe with the spring and the rest of it. Was the Stirling very similar, or was it a better made gun than the Sten?
Oh, it was made better than the Sten gun, but not as good as the Sten gun.
Now, did you have the Bren at all, or had that not come out?
No Bren attached to it.
The Bren?
The Bren gun, no, no.
That hadn't come out?
Never seen one until I went to the army.
Now, what about other training? You mentioned knots and splices. What about that? Tell me about that.
Well, they taught us the different knots. You know, the eye splice, the monkey's fist, the splicing, hands, back splice, the Garrett bend. Oh, dear. Can't think of the one.
And what were they all for? Why did you need to know all these?
Well, because you had to know them because they said there is a possibility that if you was at sea and you got sunk, nearly all the lifeboats had a mask. And you had to know how to tie different knots to hold things in different positions, and also it's very handy to do when you're painting ship, when you have to tie your own knot be lowered down over the side. See?
Did you find them difficult?
Well, they were at first, you see, left over right, right over left, and in and out. And when you're splicing, you might have a 2-inch rope, and you've got to put a ring in it to just get your hand in, what they call a hand ring. Then you splice it, but you've got to splice it down. And as you're splicing it and going back through the rope again, you've got to cut it some off so that when it gets there, it's near enough the same thickness as the original 2-inch rope. And that's same with wire. And you use a marlin spike for that. That is why the naval, on their lanyard, they have around their neck, they have, you're supposed to have your knife on that, which has got a marlin spike one side and a very sharp blade on the other.
Now, what about other seamanship? I mean, would you do a box and a compass or anything like that?
Oh, yes, you have to know the different compasses. There's 360 degrees to a compass. There's four main points. There's 16 by points, and there's 11 and a quarter degrees to a point. That's as far as I can think at the moment.
Then did they actually, box and a compass going round from various places and going backwards and forwards, did they make you do that?
But they had a big lump of cardboard and what would be the needle, and they would spin it round, and wherever it stopped, you had to tell them what that was. And it was quite good, actually, because some of the chaps there used to have little bets on it. And they'd sixpenny bet, or threepenny bet, threepenny piece bet on where it's going to land, See, so you had to... And those who had a bet on it, the old chief petty officer had the Nelson touch. I've seen those ships, only hard ships. And he used to stand there and watch, and it might be one of the other sailors there. And they say, as soon as it stopped on that, and say, "What is it?" And he put his hand over it. So you looked. But if you didn't know it before his aim went there, you were in trouble. See, so it was quite interesting.
Any other seamanship that you learned? I mean, was there any practical sailing? Obviously not there, but I mean, at the Harp or anywhere like that?
Oh, no, I wasn't allowed to go on any of those.
Why not?
Because I was too young. It was only for 18 and years over.
So any other seamanship stuff you learned that you remember?
Well, for instance, clearing line decks, how to cook, how to do...
What's that? Sorry.
How to cook, make up a meal out of nothing, out of tin stuff. Such as boiled beef and carrots, soya links, and things like that. And... also, temporary first aid. Such as if a chap got wounded in the leg or he lost a leg, they put a tourniquet on as tight as possible and count up to, say, 50, release it for 10 counts, then tie it up again so it don't cause gangrene, you don't lose too much blood. Little things like that.